Justice Radio, a weekly show on WMPG with your host, Linda Small. And today we're talking with Daniel Rosen of the Coalition for Carceral Nutrition about the food we feed incarcerated people, its impact on health, and how we use food as preventative medicine in jails and prisons, or most likely not use food as preventative medicine. So a little bit of information about your host. I'm Linda Small, a project coordinator with Maine Prisoner Advocacy Coalition and the executive director of Reentry Sisters. It's an organization that specializes in helping women and girls return home from prison. And you can learn more about us on our website at reentrysisters.org. So today we're talking about how to improve nutrition in prison and jails to create a healthier and more cost-effective outcomes for people impacted from folks living in carceral spaces to unloading the burden on taxpayers and policymakers as well. So welcome and thank you for being here, Daniel. We want to begin with an introduction. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about your background and what brought you to social justice work?
Yeah, and thanks for having me, Linda. I appreciate the opportunity. I have been myself home from incarceration for almost 3 years now. And I think I spent about 6 years incarcerated in DC and Virginia. And I think one of the things that I always felt before I was incarcerated, I had had some health scare and some health issues. When I went into prison and jail, I really had gone in focused on my health and focused on my nutrition. And it was a very difficult thing to have any sort of control over. I think it was a difficult thing to eat healthy, to be healthy, and to have to deal with, wrestle with on a daily basis. I think anybody who's been incarcerated understands that, I mean, anybody in the world, I think folks care what they eat for the most part. They want a good meal. They like to share a meal with family. They like to share a meal with their friends. And that's a particularly challenging thing, I think, on the inside. And so when I came home, I worked for a couple of advocacy organizations, not in the food and nutrition space, but just focused on conditions of confinement or focused on other issues around the criminal legal system, and really came to a place in the last year where myself and a couple of colleagues and collaborators have felt like there's a real gap in this space, that there's just not enough going on to try to affect this important issue that affects, as you said, public health broadly and in ways that I think we often kind of don't think about, that stay hidden behind the walls of jails and prisons.
Yeah, thank you for that. I think that you're right. There is a gap in this space, and that I don't think a lot of folks who aren't either directly impacted by the system or has a loved one impacted by the system really knows what food is like on the inside of prisons and jails. Do you want to speak to that for a few minutes?
Yeah. You know, there are some definite pockets of good work going on in this space, and notably in Maine, where you are and where your listeners are, is probably the most going on, really, in terms of reforming our carceral food system. I would encourage your listeners and folks to learn about what's going on in Maine. There is a lot of good attention focused on it. But I think for the most part, and there's some good organizations working in this space, I should say, Impact Justice. And Impact Justice published a great report a few years ago called Eating Behind Bars, The Hidden Punishment. And it's probably kind of one of the more seminal reports on this issue. That said, I think there's a lot more that can be done. And even in Maine, I think there's plenty of work to do and plenty of improvement to be made. There are, I think, you know, one of the problems we have in carceral spaces, there is no criminal justice system. There's no criminal legal system, really. There's a system of systems, and every state and every county has its own system and does things its own way. And that includes the way they house prisoners, the way they feed people incarcerated. It's across the board. And I think what we see are pretty widely varying standards. In fact, even the term standards is problematic, because for the most part, there are not real standards around this issue. There are some organizations working on understanding what the laws and policies are around carceral food. And I think that's very much needed in this space. But I think for the most part, corrections agencies are left to define for themselves how they're going to feed people, how they're going to treat people in general, but how they're going to feed people especially. And I think what we saw was that nutrition in prisons and jails is really one of those areas where it tends to become a box checking exercise, where corrections agencies say, yep, check the box, we fed that person X number of calories, or however they're defining their responsibility, and in ways that ultimately are harmful to both the people themselves and to communities and to public health more broadly. And I think that's something that is addressable. This is not an insoluble problem. I think there are a lot of difficult problems around the criminal legal system that are deeply structural. This, I don't think, is one of them. I think over the last several decades, we have decreased food quality and we've decreased our spending on food to the point where it's now become a detrimental public health issue. And when we spend a couple dollars a day feeding people, I think that's not a surprising result. The average American spends about $11 a day on groceries and another, frankly, $9 a day eating out. If we're including everything, the average American spends about $20 a day feeding themselves. And we're spending about 10% of that to feed people incarcerated. And I don't think we can expect good outcomes when that happens. Even if you look at something like school lunches, it varies widely from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, but most places spend a few dollars, $3-4 on a school lunch, on a single meal. Mm. And then we have these jurisdictions spending, you know, 50, 75 cents on lunch to feed people incarcerated. The outcomes are just not surprising.
Yeah, thank you for that overview, Daniel. A few things stuck out to me. Number one, you know, we have 15 county jails here in Maine that they're their own fiefdoms. And like you said, they're going to treat and feed people as they see fit. And most of that is directly related to the budget. And also, there is no oversight for food and how we feed people and what we feed people and how we make things offered, whether that is the system, the carceral system, providing those three meals a day, or just making available the food that someone could purchase or family could purchase and send it in to their loved ones. And just to touch on Maine, we do have a few good things going on. But I would like to point out there's tremendous gender differences. So at the Maine State Prison, maximum security prison for men, there are greenhouses that go along and they work them year round. And there are some fresh foods there. There's also something called an earned living unit for a very small handful, less than 1% of the men who are incarcerated at this prison, who can order food out, let's say from Walmart, and cook their own food, which is wonderful. No such thing exists for the women and hasn't for quite some time. And there's a lot of gender inequity in terms of food. And also nutrition is different for a man versus a woman, especially when you're talking about reproductive health, menopause, and things of that nature too, which I think also needs to be addressed. But I want to touch a little bit on, you know, there's no standards for these issues. And the fact that we're spending less than 10% that the average person spends on their daily food intake, and how you might think that's related to actually devaluing the people that we're talking about here.
Yeah, thanks. And I'm glad you brought up the gender issue. I think there are real gender equity issues here, and a lot of the opportunities, the limited opportunities that do exist in the food and nutrition space in carceral spaces, tend to be aimed at men and not at women. And I think there, men and women tend to have different nutrition problems when it comes to carceral food service. There's some recognition of that, but I think we need a lot more recognition when it comes to how we expand the opportunities and expand the improvements of those gender differences. I totally agree with you. I think I'm sorry, I forgot your question.
Oh, I'm just wondering if there's a connection between the lack of funding, lack of care, lack of oversight, and devaluing the individuals who are actually inside the system. Do we not care?
Thank you. Yes. I think this is an important part of the equation. I think we could talk endlessly about the cost issues and the budgetary issues and the policy and regulatory issues here. But I think I don't want to lose sight of, and we as an organization certainly don't lose sight of, the real human issues here. I think when you, as an individual incarcerated, are handed a tray 3 times a day that is essentially slop, you start to understand exactly how the state feels about you. 3 times a day, you can't miss it. They are telling you how they feel about you. They are telling you how much you matter to them. And I think it's difficult to not internalize some of that. And I think when we affront people's dignity like that, 3 times a day, in your face, here you go, this is what we think about you. When we, I think, disregard people's agency that way, I think it has an impact on people, especially people who encounter that and experience it for years and years on end. So I think we certainly don't lose sight of the human dignity issues. We like to say, I think, that our goal is food in jails and prisons that promotes dignity and opportunity for people incarcerated. And food that heals instead of harms. I think food can heal. Food can be such a source of joy and of feeling good about yourself. And it can also harm. It can harm you physically. It can harm you emotionally. And it's a choice that corrections agencies make, I think, to feed people that way. I think they will talk to you. If you talk to corrections agencies, a lot of them will talk to you about the budget constraints and other security constraints they have around feeding people. Almost none of them will talk to you about the human dignity issues involved. And I think that's just not how they see the world. And we have to acknowledge, I think, that this does have an impact on people's sense of self and on how they feel about themselves physically and emotionally.
Yeah, I think that's such a vital connection you just made, Daniel, between what you're served for food and the internalization of the views of your oppressors. So you're actually bringing, you're embodying that, you're eating, right? You're actually taking into the body these views of your oppressors, because we know what we eat becomes a part of who we are. And so that can be deeply impactful emotionally, psychologically, as well as physically. And that's a really interesting point about making it clear that you don't matter and you are not of value, and what that does to a person's mind and a person's soul, especially when we know 95% of the folks are getting out. What kind of people do we want as future neighbors, people in our churches and our schools and our neighborhoods? So yeah,
That's exactly right. We want people to come home and make good choices, not just about their nutrition, but about their lives. And I think I think it's hard to expect people to make good decisions about the rest of their lives if it's difficult for them to make good choices about the food that they eat. Food is so fundamental to our existence, not just to our relationships and to our family bonds. It is to those things, but it's so fundamental to ourselves, how we treat ourselves, how we think about ourselves, how we sustain ourselves. And so I think we have to understand that those fundamental ways that people think about themselves and the way we treat people in those fundamental ways matter when they come home as well.
Yes, thank you for that. You are listening to Justice Radio with your host, Linda Small, and today we're talking with Daniel Rosen of the Coalition for Carceral Nutrition about the food we feed incarcerated people, its impact on their health, and how we use food as maybe a system of harm instead of a system of healing. So, Daniel, can you tell us, I mean, this is a great background. Is this issue what drove you and your collaborators to come up with the Coalition for Carceral Nutrition?
Yeah, no, it absolutely it is. And I know that the name itself is a mouthful, but I think, we didn't just want to say this is about prison food. First, I think it's about prisons and jails and other youth detention facilities, tribal facilities, immigration detention facilities, right? These systems of harm are perpetuated well beyond just state or federal prison systems. They're in every carceral space. And I think then this isn't just about food. It is about food, but it's also about nutrition more broadly. And I think we wanted to be intentional in how we talk about this. And the coalition piece, I think, is important because I think we have a carceral food system where all of the stakeholders don't even necessarily understand that they are playing in the same ballpark. We have a really widely dispersed system that ends up in food trays in front of people in jails and prisons. And whether that the stakeholders I think of as incarcerated people and their families, of course, but also corrections agencies who have to figure out how to feed people, local growers and producers who I think are often shut out of markets by corporate food systems. Advocates certainly in the conditions of confinement space, but also advocates in the public health space, in the environmental waste space. And prisons and jails are huge sources of environmental waste when it comes to food. And so those supply chain constituents, those workforce providers even who have a role to play in, say, things like greenhouse programs, all of those stakeholders, I think, are really part of this unseen and unlinked coalition. And I think we decided that we wanted to form some coalition building in that space around not just prisons, but all carceral spaces and around nutrition issues more broadly, not just what food is served. I think one of the things, one of the ways that we will see success is when health and nutrition are thought of together in carceral systems. Health and nutrition are not separable, and we treat them as if they are. There's a lot of carceral agencies that spend 10 times as much on health as they do on nutrition. Their healthcare costs are soaring. I mean, they're for all of us, right? I mean, healthcare costs keep go up, and they only go up. In carceral spaces, I think that's even more true. And when we are arguing over pennies in our food service budget and millions of dollars in our healthcare budget, something's really out of whack here. Because these two things are linked, obviously. What we feed people is going to absolutely impact our healthcare budget and issues around diet-related disease, chronic disease. And we're treating these as if they're separate things. So the Coalition for Carceral Nutrition is really just stood up within the last few months, and it's slow going, starting up a new nonprofit with folks who are doing other things and working other jobs and trying to do this as a labor of love. I think it's something that's going to take some time to get going, but I also have been gratified in the last few months and even over the last year as we've been talking about this and now doing it, the response we're getting from organizations, all of those kinds of stakeholders that we've been talking to about the gaps in this space and the room for improvement in this space. We know that there's good pockets of work going on. In this detention facility or in this county jail, there are people who get it. There are corrections administrators who get it. Maine's Corrections Commissioner understands this issue, that there are real impacts to the way we feed people, not just within his facilities, but within, Maine society overall. Maine's food service manager, Mark McBrine, understands this issue. And so I think we've been gratified in these early conversations with folks and with with partners and with allies and even with corrections agencies that at least in some quarters there is their understanding that what we have now is absolutely doing a disservice to everybody involved in the system. And I don't want to ignore the supply chain and the growers, right? I mean, I think we have a system here where corporate food service has largely taken over in most jails and prisons. There are some that still run their own operations, run their own kitchens, but very few the way it was 30, 40, 50 years ago, cook from scratch anymore. Most of them have some sort of commercial food service operator running their kitchen. It's one of the things we're trying to get a handle on right now, actually, is figuring out what that landscape looks like, understanding where multinational corporations have taken over jail and prison kitchens and the impact of that. I think we tend to, prisons and jails, carceral spaces tend to outsource those things that are easy to outsource, and food service is certainly one of those. Mm-hmm. So one of our early, I think, projects will be to get a kind of baseline, and at least with state systems, give them a grade. How are they doing on feeding mm-hmm. people? That's a lot more difficult at the county level, where we have 3,500 roughly county jail systems in this country. But at the state level, where we have 50 state systems, I think this is something that we are committed to, is giving folks a picture of how food service looks right now. I want to touch on one other thing you mentioned earlier, which was the commissary system. What we tend to do when institutional food service is so bad is drive people toward a need to purchase food at the commissary, also which are commercial operations, many of which are also owned by the food service companies themselves. So Trinity Food Service owns, the same group owns Keefe Commissary. Mm-hmm. Aramark Food Service owns Union Supply Commissary. And so these things are inextricably linked. Commissary foods tend to be even more unhealthy in different ways, but also more unhealthy than in the institutional food service that we're giving people. High in sodium, high in ultra-processed foods, all packaged foods, and expensive. So we're doing economic harm to people and their families by driving them towards commissary. And we're doing physical health harms to people by driving them towards commissary foods with poor institutional food service. Most people can't pay for commissary themselves. Most people, even if they have a job within the institution, those don't pay enough, really, to purchase everything you need from the commissary, which includes your hygiene needs. And so people have to eat something. If they can't eat what they're being served from the institution, they're going to do what they need to do to find food in the commissary and to purchase food from the commissary. And that's a whole extra layer, I think, of harms here that doesn't get talked about enough.
Yeah, I love that you connect health and nutrition because they cannot be separated, whether you're an incarcerated person or you're not incarcerated person. They are inextricably linked. And, you know, in Maine, we have Keefe Commissary here and trying to supplement your food intake based on what you receive on your tray three times a day, it's like Russian roulette with your health. You're trying to choose the lesser of the evils that are on that. And obviously it comes packaged, so it's all processed foods, as you mentioned, high in all the things you don't want them to be high in, right? Saturated fat, sodium, sugar, all of those hot buttons that feed into health concerns. And I'm sure you also know, Danielle, and I know plenty of people who go in healthy and come out with diabetes, heart disease, and a whole host of health issues, which is then becomes a burden on society in general and puts more pressure on families and individuals and our healthcare system. But yeah. One thing I
thought, I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, one thing that caught my attention as you were talking about local growers, because that was always a hot button to me when I was incarcerated, that we're doing a disservice, first of all, to the local economy. They would love, obviously, to be able to sell their wares, seasonal goods, into the carceral system, into the prisons, perhaps even the local jails. And then also, I noticed on your LinkedIn post, a quote that tied right into that says, jails and prisons turn fresh food into contraband. So, can you explain what that means to our listeners who really have no idea what contraband is?
Sure, yeah, and that there's so many things in what you just said to touch on. I think the contraband piece, jails and prisons endlessly worry about people making wine from fresh fruit, especially. And so anytime there's fresh fruit or vegetables, really, but really fruit more so, they tend to get overly concerned from a security standpoint. That anybody who keeps a piece of fruit is making wine with it. I used to go to great lengths to procure fresh fruit and vegetables, but I always knew also that when I was caught with those things, they were going to be considered contraband. And I would, even if somebody just handed me an apple they didn't want, and then all of the people I was incarcerated with knew that if they had extra fresh fruit or vegetables, I wanted it, was happy to give up other commissary items for it. But everywhere I was incarcerated, anybody keeping those types of items, you could get a charge for it. You could get an institutional charge for it, and a write-up for it. If somebody wanted to, they could send you to the hole for it. Fresh fruit and vegetables outside of the chow hall, outside of the meal service, are considered contraband, everywhere that I've been incarcerated. And that is deeply problematic when we turn the healthiest things that somebody can eat into literally illegal items.
So, thank you, Daniel, for sharing your insights into how food is used inside jails and prisons as a form of punishment and neglect, right? That often causes ill health and drives healthcare costs even higher. Right.
Yeah,
And
thanks very much.
people, yeah, thank you. So, listeners, we have some exciting new shows coming to Justice Radio. We're going to explore some criminal legal issues and processes in Maine. We're going to talk about what it's like to be arrested or arraigned or go through the court system. What does it mean to plea bargain or go to trial? And how do our sentencing laws impact the lives of Mainers and so much more? So visit the Justice Radio show page on WMPG.org for archived episode aired on WMPG, WERU, and WNHB. And a big thank you to Samuel James for his gift of music that opens and closes each episode.